documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
Just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here for the next 3 hours. And I think we'll have Vicki Davis. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. And today is the 30th of September, 2017. And here we are again, ladies and gentlemen. It's been very hot here in southern Michigan, and there's a lot going on here. Kind of flying by the seat of our pants this morning because at the last minute, Vicki Davis had a little computer snafu, and she's not back online. Oh, there she is. Maybe we'll try to get a hold of her here. I don't know if she's got her situation taken care of or not?
Yeah, I did.
All right. Got a little bit of an echo.
Yeah, hang on.
Okay. Live radio, ladies and gentlemen, this is what it's all about. I'll tell you what, okay. while you're doing that and getting all settled, something I just stumbled across the other day that was, to me, and I think to you too, it will be an absolute outrage. You know, Mr. Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota, and Mr. Conspiracy Theory, he had his show on True TV, you know, masquerading as a patriot.
I remember.
Yeah, he's just come out in favor of basically open borders. He was at some kind of function where it had the word nexus in the background. And this is what he had to say about letting all these illegal aliens in the country.
Who's going to do this cleanup? The white people? I think we should.
He's talking about the hurricane cleanup. So here's what he said.
Who's going to do this cleanup? The white people? I think we should open our borders and bring the Mexicans up. We got a lot of work for them. Cleaning up Houston, cleaning up Florida. We had a big storm in Minnesota by my golf course. I found it interesting. Hail, so a lot of homes needed to be re-roofed. All of a sudden, I'm hearing this Mexican music every day. Because as I looked out at the roofers, they were all Mexican. So think of that, people. When you want to stop these immigrants from coming to our country, who's going to do that work? You? Think about it. These are hardworking people. We want them. We don't want to turn. And let's remember something. Unless you're native United Statesian, we're all immigrants, aren't we?
No.
How quick
what a
we forget.
Puke.
And if they
that
want to put
is,
this wall.
Go ahead.
That guy is such a puke. I've known about him for a number of years. He came out on the Alex Jones program, you know, for open borders and. He has to have lived a life of privilege because I worked and everybody that I knew worked hard. I worked in the spud harvest for crying out loud. I worked on the combine. So I don't know who the hell he thinks he's talking about that we need them to do our work for us.
We've never needed anybody to do our work for us.
No.
Who's going to do the work? White people? Yes. But here it gets better.
All up. I'll tell you what then they need to do. Take down the Statue of Liberty. Take it down. Take it down.
That's
why
fine
have a statue
with me.
That's
take
meaningless?
The damn thing down.
That statue says, send us your poor. Send us your this. Send us your that.
Well, he doesn't even know what it says.
Yeah.
You see the latest?
Fine with me. I, you know, great.
Yeah, me
take
too.
It down.
Me too.
Send us your this. Send us your that.
Send us your this. Send us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free. That's what it says, moron.
Why don't we send them our morons like Jesse Ventura? He had to move to Mexico permanently.
Latest? Oh, no. We only want college educated. You got to have a job. You got to be, you know, on the up of the up. So what do we need with the Statue of Liberty anymore? The whole statue's bullshit now. if you want to look at it. Excuse my French.
Yeah, well, I wish I could send you. Yeah, and speaking of French, why don't you go over there and talk to them about open borders?
Yeah, see how well they're doing. Actually, the idea for the design of the Statue of Liberty was inspired by a French lawyer. And it was, of course, designed by an artist, but the concept for it was the inspiration provided by a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, the French were really good about exporting their criminals, their mentally ill, and so the United States has become a dumping ground,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and it continues to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it's about. I mean, to suggest that those who are against having our country flooded with illegals, I mean, there's already a, I can't keep stressing this enough, there is already a procedure in place for taking immigrants. And no, we're not all immigrants. I was born here, thank you very much. If I was born in Europe, maybe I've got European ancestors. I suppose that's the case. But I wasn't born in Europe. I wouldn't even know where to go.
Yeah.
I was born in Dearborn, Michigan, which is also being taken over. So
I was in Idaho, and my family has been here for, I don't know, 150 years or so. So I don't know why they think that just because people live in the country next door in Mexico that they should be able to just cross the border at will and take jobs from Americans.
And that's the problem. Because we can say, well, who's going to do this work? Who's done this work throughout time? Who's been doing this work? NAFTA hasn't come along until 93. Who did the work before NAFTA?
Yeah.
The General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, what was that, you know, 1945? Or when did the GATT came along? Was it 48?
Oh, 48, I think.
Yeah, 48.
But they started those negotiations even before the war ended.
Right, but my point is that we didn't have all this this trade apparatus, these free trade areas, is what they really are, these regions, which are designed to break down borders. None of this stuff existed. You know, it's been a relative phenomenon. Who did the work before that?
Well, the whole idea of those trade agreements was to break down nation states. From the beginning, I have it in that book that I've talked about before called Merchants of Peace.
Mm-hmm.
The deal between the International Chamber of Commerce and the Carnegie International Foundation for or Endowment. I don't know. There are about five or six Carnegies, but it's the international one. They had an agreement, and from the beginning, the idea was, quote, world peace through free world trade. And the idea that the nation states are protected by militaries, if they just got rid of the militaries and just got rid of borders, then world trade. That was the slogan of IBM.
Yeah.
And Thomas Watson was one of the merchants of peace.
Maybe I'll warm to the idea of letting these people into the country if Jesse Ventura agrees to house them in his house. You know, did you notice in that clip he says, next to my golf course?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
Mr. Moneybags, why don't you put up or shut up?
Yeah.
You pay for him then. You think we got all this money to be able... Listen, the feds, according to CNS News, the feds just collect record taxes through August. Record taxes. And they're still running a $673.7 billion deficit.
Mm-hmm.
We have a $20-plus trillion national debt here. And they're just wanting us to just flood the country with all these illegals, the worst kind in society. Nobody has anything. You know, and frankly, I don't. You know, Trump's big thing is let's flood them with educated people and people who are can contribute and work. I don't want them working either because they're competing for jobs.
Right. I saw an article that said that Trump approved something like, I think it was 150,000 H-1B visas. Well, every job that an H-1B visa holder takes is a job that an American young person isn't going to get in the IT field, IT or engineering.
Yeah, we have this liberal left squeezing from the poverty side, and we got the so-called conservative right squeezing from the right side. You got people like Trump wanting to allow amnesty for people who or allow STEM workers and engineers and this sort of thing to stay in the country after they get their college degree because we need those kinds of workers. So you've got that on the right. And then on the left, you've got all these poverty people who are wanting to flood the country with poor people who have no skills and are going to be welfare recipients their entire life. Either way, you've got both sides wanting to flood the country. It's all about open borders.
It's domestic warfare to drive wages down to the lowest level in the world so that American workers can compete with people in Bangladesh and communist China, the billion and a half people in communist China. You know, how low can we go? We can go all the way down to poverty level, but you can't maintain a 21st century infrastructure when you're paying the absolute lowest wages in the world.
Yeah, and speaking of outrages, you've got California is wanting to ban gas car sales after 2040. So they're moving in the direction of only having automobiles that run on electric, I suppose.
Maybe we'll get lucky and California will secede from the union.
Yeah, that's what I said to somebody on Twitter the other day. You know, what about that Calexit? You know, I'm looking for the Calexit. There's a few conservative people in that state, but I guess we could take them into the rest of the country and let the rest of California drift off out into the Pacific.
They could leave California. It wouldn't hardly make a dent in California's population.
Yeah, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. So, and then that's just one of many restrictions being put on travel. You got the TSA facial biometric body scanners and government watch lists being used in train stations. So, you know, originally it was airports, now it's train stations that the DHS is graduating to. And I say next it'll be the roadways, because the idea is that we're not supposed to travel anywhere.
Yeah. Well, the technology at transportation hubs, that's also a front of the war on us. If they control the transportation hubs, then they control the population. And because they're controlling, you know, commerce, and they're controlling movement, and they're controlling everything. So the transportation hubs are key, absolutely central to the war on the American people. And we have a situation in which it's almost like we have a twin kind of thing. We have the commercial side, we also have the military side. Both the military and the commercial are involved in the transportation hubs. And so, and you know, our local officials, when you start talking about national security and, you know, terrorism and all the rest of that nonsense that they set us up for, cave in to the pressure from military and, home scam security.
Mm-hmm.
So they're putting in the fusion centers at the transportation hubs that is going to enslave us. So,
yeah, it's about collecting all the data, but it's also about restricting our travel. And there's so many things going on today, Vicki. I see this blurring. Several years ago, I saw, and it really, I remember very well when it happened. There was an incident aboard a school bus where a group of students were told, there was a drill that Homeland Security, I believe, conducted on, I think it was Homeland Security, they conducted a drill on a bus about an active shooter or hijacking the bus or something like that. And they terrorized these kids, these school kids, without ever telling them that it was just a drill. And at the time, I told Nancy, there was that incident and there was another incident. There was the second incident was at a school with administrators. Now, this time the school children weren't there, but they came in, terrorized these staffers who were at a meeting. And then they said, that's just a drill. And at the time, I told Nancy, I says, I think we're starting to see a blurring of reality versus fiction. And since that time, all of these false flags have begun taking place where you have crisis actors. Maybe there are real people who are real victims, but they're interspersed with crisis actors. You've got real events taking place or rehearsals, practice sessions taking place alongside real events. So you don't know what's real and what isn't anymore. And it's a total psyop situation. Well, we have another situation like that that just took place this week, just 4 days ago. Philippine commandos, helped by U.S. security officials, stormed a commercial airliner in a practice exercise, but they did not tell most of the civilian participants that it was just a drill, the Philippine Defense Ministry confirmed Tuesday. This is out of Newsweek on the 26th. Mm-hmm. Special forces from the Philippine military performed the exercise last week, aided by U.S. information and guidance. The drills took place in Hawaii and at a former U.S. base outside of Manila. For dozens of passengers, their worst nightmares appeared to have come true. The Islamic State militant group, ISIS, had apparently hijacked their plane. Now imagine being aboard a commercial airliner and ISIS comes aboard. But it was all planned by Washington and Manila as part of a Tempest Wind. Tempest Wind was the name of the exercise, a series of bilateral counterterrorism drills between the two countries. In total, 1,200 Philippine and American personnel and civilians took part in the drill. The majority of the Philippine civilian contingent were told that the plane flying from Sydney to Honolulu had been taken by 8 ISIS fighters and would land at Clark Air Base, northwest of the Philippine capital, Manila, on the Luzon Island. Many of the participants were unaware of the drill until the last minute, thinking the hijacking was for real. Defense Department spokesman Arsenio Andalong told reporters, according to Reuters, the drill gave both sides valuable lessons on dealing with such crisis. There are many operational and technical gaps discovered. Even the U.S. found some of the protocols did not work the way it is expected. Yeah, you know what this really is? To see how people would react. That's what it is. They want to see what would happen in the event that this really happened, so that the next time it'll be real. They'll really pull it off.
Yeah. Did you read the last thing I wrote about the invisible fist?
Yes. Very good.
Okay, good. Yeah, because
I talk about that
what you're talking about goes directly to what I was saying, what I was talking about. They have set up a situation in our country where we could actually have foreign military people behind the cover of a domestic business.
Yeah, I want to get into that, and I'm kind of building up there. because we've got this absolute outrage, and then we have people calling for civil war in America. November 4th, there's a group called Refuse Fascism. They're a part of the Antifa group, I guess. And, well, I'll tell you what. They shut down Highway 101 in California. I don't know if you heard about this at all.
Wow, no, that's pretty serious. 101 is a really important highway.
Yeah, they were out there carrying signs and saying, November 4th, it begins. That's what their signs said. Each person carried a number or a letter. And they're out there in the middle of the highway. How they managed to avoid getting run over, I don't know. It makes me wonder if they didn't have people in the cars on front. You know what I mean? Because I wouldn't be running out in front of cars. Because you never know what somebody behind the wheel is going to do.
If they did it during commute time, there were a lot of parked cars, you know.
Yeah, you know what? That's probably true.
Yeah.
But I still don't think I would be wanting to get out in the middle of the highway. But regardless, these people are nuts. Or very well paid. Or both.
Both, I think.
The point is that they're out there, and from various vantage points, you've got other people on, I guess, overpasses or what have you, that are taking pictures, taking videos, and doing a Periscope.
All right, so the 376 viewers that are on Refuse Fascism Live right now, let me tell you something. People are there, and they're putting something on the line.
Okay, now this is a moron that's with the group, apparently. And she's talking about what these people out in the street carrying the signs, and she's pointing her camera at these morons in the middle of the road. She's talking about what they're doing here.
Why? Because the president of this country just said that he is okay with blowing into pieces 25 million people in North Korea. That is not exactly something to take lightly, okay?
Okay.
And people cannot go about their business as usual while there's white supremacy in the White House. While you have somebody in power that said that people in Charlottesville that were carrying torches are fine people, and people like Colin Kaepernick are sons of bitches that need to get fired, okay?
Now, Colin Kaepernick, just in case people don't know, he's that football player who in 2013, where all this NFL nonsense started, he took a knee. You know, this is the new thing that's been introduced into the lexicon now. You take a knee. I guess it's a football term. Anyway, the point is, you had all this controversy this week about the NFL, which I would say is a distraction, except for one thing. I think it's all pre-planned. Mm-hmm. I think it's just to add to the overall chaos. The NFL has a history of working with the federal government. Maybe we'll get into some of that later. But they had a contract with the Defense Department for false patriotism, basically, to honor the soldiers. And I believe that goes back to 2009. So the NFL is, in my view, working with the federal government. And all of this, you know, I think that they've proven that they'll do anything for money. I mean, they're pretty much money whores.
Factions of the federal government. I think they're actually, the war starts internally within our government.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
This is not normal times. And people are not going to sit back and allow for this to continue. People that are there right now that are putting forward a vehicle for people to act right now. November 4th is when millions of people take to the streets and stay in the streets until this Trump-Pence regime is driven from power. And all these people that are saying run them over, what you're trying to get rid of the protectedly First Amendment right.
No, you don't have a First Amendment right to shut down a highway, moron.
And that's what the person in the White House is doing. When he's saying that Colin Kaepernick and these people that are kneeling should be fired for expressing their First Amendment right, for standing up for people that have been murdered by the police and that still have not seen any justice. The people that are there right now holding the signs are on the right side of history because they're standing with the people of the world and they're putting forward the vehicle that is required to drive out this Trump-Pence.
that she thinks this is a third world country, if she thinks that they're going to get a bunch of people and march on Washington and take over the White House, she's really just totally delusional.
Well, yeah. Come on.
Sorry.
You think any of these people aren't delusional?
And people that support this and that want to see this Trump Pence regime driven from power needs to share this and needs to make a donation.
Make a donation.
We're fighting like all hell.
Make a donation, which is
that's the real thing. Yeah, make a donation before you go out into the street.
Exactly.
Fighting like all hell to drive out this Trump Pence regime. It is not normal when people in wheelchairs get dragged out of hearings.
Okay, I have no idea what she's talking about there. Wheelchairs, people in wheelchairs getting dragged out of hearings?
Apparently she doesn't know that a lot of things are done for, or maybe she does, although I don't know. A lot of things are done for show, you know, because that's the way this whole... everything is almost like a disinformation campaign. It's all theater. It's done for effect.
Yeah, and I think this is too, really. You want to get down to it. Although the violence probably will be very real, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's take the bottom of the hour break and we'll continue on the other side. I got a little more of this clip. I think it's almost over. I want to examine a little bit about this organization. We'll be back here, folks. This is Government America, Vicki Davis, Darren Weeks. Please don't go away. This is Government America with Vicki Davis and Darren Weeks. As we continue on here, the website is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. My email address is radio@governamerica.com. Vicki is channelingreality.com and also thetechnocratictyranny.com. And she is also a contributor to tvoinews.net. So all of the websites that she has are up on our site at governamerica.com. You can click across and see what she's been up to lately. And we're going to be getting into some of her writings here in just a little bit. In the meantime, we were talking before the break about this upcoming call to action by the Refuse Fascism organization. These people that locked down Highway 101 just a day or two ago with signs saying November 4th, it begins. And going to, you know, and she's calling in that video. Well, let me just finish the video here real quick.
Okay, it is not normal when the president of this country says that he's okay with blowing into pieces 25 million people.
All right, 25 million people. Well, I don't think that's what he said. I don't think he wants to blow apart 25 million people. Now, the regime around him, that's a different story. The people that are carrying him, and then this pro-war agenda is bipartisan, by the way. It's important to point out, all of this stuff continued under, you know, remember what Obama said, you know, as soon as I get to be president, first thing I will do, I will end this war, we're going to bring those troops home, you can take that to the bank. And here we are, Obama's administration has come and gone, and what's happened with the troops? Yeah, they're still dispatched.
They're going to be dispatched for forever.
Yes, it's a never-ending situation.
Uh-huh.
A never-ending war. And it's the whole neocon thing. Victoria Nuland, former State Department spokesperson, all tied in with the Kagans, the whole warlike clan of them. And they're liberals. They're Democrats. They're extreme leftists, very much like this woman is. And all of these clowns holding signs in the middle of the road. So there's no difference between any of this. This is a false dialogue, a false paradigm, but it's designed to create chaos and destruction from within the borders of our country, because what this really is a communist movement. Pressure yes. from below, pressure from above. The whole idea is to create disturbance, create chaos, which will then justify sending the tanks and the 1033 weapons, the bayonets, which, believe it or not, 1033 even allows your local police department to have bayonets. That came out in a congressional hearing.
Yeah.
But that's what it's designed to do.
And who's in your local police department? Are they Americans or not?
Well, there you go. That's the question. Well, you know, wasn't it Henry Kissinger, I remember years ago, at a Bilderberg conference, I believe, Henry Kissinger was overheard saying that today Americans would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow they will be grateful. I believe it was Henry Kissinger that said that.
Yeah.
This is especially true if there were some kind of perceived threat that threatened their very existence. And I'm paraphrasing now because I don't remember exactly the quote, but that's close.
Mm-hmm.
Whether real or promulgated. And we know, again, if there's a theme for the show, we know that they're blurring the lines between reality and fiction.
Right. Well, and also, I watched a hearing of the Helsinki Commission, and I do have a link to it in the, not the last thing I wrote, but the thing I wrote before, to this hearing where our own members of our own Congress were talking about how much they wanted to do for the people of the Ukraine and Russia. And I was thinking, well, if our representatives are really representing the people over there in the Eastern Bloc countries, then they must have a counterpart over there who want to protect us from tyranny. So who do I write to from the Eastern Bloc countries to ask for help for our Patriot prisoners that are in jail in Nevada? I mean, you know, I was thinking about that, but I can't go there, you know, where I would go ask any international organization for anything ever at any time ever.
Yeah, it wouldn't do you any good anyway.
well, I know, but it's the point that in the system that they're setting up here, they have all these non-governmental organizations that are supposed to represent the interests of the people in the various countries. Now, this is a global system, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the way it's set up is that your country is your officials in your country are. And the United Nations
okay,
is supposed
Skype,
to.
Skype got you. Repeat that.
Oh, I said that the people in your country are just simply the managers.
Mm-hmm.
And the United Nations is supposed to safeguard your human rights, right?
Mm. I guess.
But, of course, we know it doesn't work like that. But that's the nature of the psychotic system that they have set up at the international level. So what it ultimately means is that the American people really have no representation anywhere.
Yeah.
Not at home, not abroad, nowhere.
Well, I've wondered if we could go to some other country and sneak in the other countries and get the same kind of benefits that the people sneaking in here can get. But you know what? I know the answer to it, and the answer is no. Unless you're a Middle Easterner, or unless you're somebody who maybe an African who
somebody famous.
Yeah, well, if you got enough money, you can buy anything.
Like Snowden, well,
including the NFL.
I don't think Snowden had money, but he did make a name for himself before he asked for asylum.
Yeah. So we have this situation with this Antifa group, and I want to dive into this a little bit. They say November 4th, and the way I found this was because she had mentioned it about donating it in that video. Donate to refusefascism.org, and I had a hard time making out what she said, but I did manage to find their website, refusefascism.org. It says, no, big no with an exclamation mark. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. November 4th, it began. The Trump-Pence regime must go. And they say, on November 4th, 2017, take to the streets and public squares in cities and towns across the country, continuing day after day, night after night, not stopping until our demand is met. This nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And they go through a series of nightmares. They say, a nightmare. Immigrants living in terror. Their next step could mean detention, deportation, being torn from children and loved ones. A nightmare. You know, God forbid we forget we enforce our immigration laws. But
yeah. That deportation can't come soon enough for that little girl.
No. It's a nightmare. Uh-huh. Muslims and refugees are demonized, banned, and cast out. A nightmare. Millions, children, the elderly, disabled, the sick, the poor, denied health care, food assistance, the very right to live. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know what? And I'm one of those. I'm one of those people on Medicare that is being abused by the government. I just canceled my Part B coverage. And you know why? Because I'm paying over $100 a month for the Part B coverage. And I did have a claim in December, and the hospital billed Medicare, and Medicare came back and told them to bill me more.
Wow.
And the reason why they did that is because they are averaging the cost, apparently, this is what the girl at the hospital told me, they are averaging the cost of services within the Western region. Which means that they're including Portland and Seattle and that whole, Western seaboard. And they're averaging the cost of services with, you know, my little bumpkin town here in Idaho. So the hospital, what the hospital billed me for a service is less here than what it is, you know, if you look at the average for the region. So Medicare told the hospital they could bill me more.
Hmm.
When I canceled the Medicare Part B, I had to fill out this form, giving the reason why. And I said, well, I really don't need this kind of help from the government. You know, it's taken me about a year to pay this off.
Yeah, somebody's got to be able to pay for the affordable healthcare system.
Yeah. Well, apparently, you know, I live on Social Security, but they're wanting me to subsidize somebody somewhere.
Yeah, of course. You know, but yeah. We're not paying for enough. We got to have more. Yeah. And if we don't have more, it's a nightmare.
I canceled it because I thought, you know, well, I'm better off paying my own doctor bills. Because at least then the hospital bill will bill me the local price for whatever the service is. Yeah. And I'll pay that. And I'll be better off.
So, anyway, continuing with this nonsense. A nightmare. Women objectified, degraded, and denied the basic right to control their own reproduction. Now, is that really going on? I don't think it's going on, but that's what they say. Women are being denied the basic right to control their own reproduction with fundamentalist Christian fascism increasingly being made law. That is a term, I think, came out of a think tank. Christian fascism.
Yeah, she obviously doesn't have the kind of education to come up with this kind of stuff.
Well, I'm not talking about... let's not think that woman that you just heard from is this group. I think she's a part of this group, but I don't think... I think she's just a dummy on the ground, honestly. Probably one of the Page stooges.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but...
Now, this is very well organized. This is very well organized. In fact, I'll get to the funding here in a minute. They say, a nightmare. LGBTQ people stigmatized, ostracized, and denied civil rights. By the way, I want to say about this Christian fascism stuff. Because people have been warning that there is a cultural war going on in the West for the heart and soul of the nation. They've been warning about that for decades. Here it is, right in your face, under the guise of, oh, we got to have all these people have all these rights and blah, blah, blah. And here, what about my right? What about your right? What about everybody's people's right to speak? What about the right of people to speak on college campuses that are being shut down by these radicals? I guess their rights, your rights don't count unless your rights go along with their communist agenda.
Right. That's exactly right. It's their way or no way.
You have the right to do exactly as you're told, slave. And that's exactly, these people are going to be in charge someday. If the American people, decent American people all across this country don't wake up and start getting active. We've talked about this for years, the importance of getting active, the importance of speaking out. And as we've slept our side, largely, these people have been actively working to get themselves into the nooks and crannies of government and key institutions all throughout this country. And by key institutions, I'm talking about organizations like the NFL. I mean, what a bunch of loons. The NFL is already suffering from its own cultural Marxist bullcrap that it's been pulling for years. I mean, you know, putting football players... Look, folks, don't get me wrong. I'm not... I don't want anybody to have cancer. My mother died of cancer. Lots of people are dying of cancer. I think most of these cancers could be cured if the cure wasn't being suppressed. But that aside, cancer is a tragedy. But you don't put football players dressed up in pink for breast cancer awareness. Because football is, at least male football, is predominantly a male sport. Now, I understand there's a lot of women that like, you know, but this is the kind of stuff these people have been doing. And they're embracing the cultural Marxist ideas and ideology. When you put guys in pink, something's a little wrong with you. Or you've just been paid a lot of money and you're willing to take the money and do anything. Either way, the more this garbage has gone through, the more they've alienated their base. They're digging their own grave. And you know what? It's kind of fun to watch in a way. Because honestly, the NFL has been a distraction for the American people for many, 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 many years. And it's time for the NFL to go out of business. It's time for the American people to get off the couch, quit drinking their beer, start facing reality, because you're losing every single thing that you hold dear. Or at least you supposedly hold dear. Do you have a pulse, or do you not have a pulse? Are you alive? Look around you. Quit being a bunch of zombies and face the reality that you're losing your country, people.
We are indeed.
I hate sports. I hate it with a passion. Gosh, I hate it almost as much as I hate politics. But, you know, I see a lot of parallels between sports and politics. Hey, my team, my team, my team. Go Republicans. Or my team, my team. Go Democrats. How is it any different than the NFL? And you know, right or wrong.
For war.
Yeah. That's why it's been promoted for so many years. Because it is a way for males to get out their aggression without actually going and fighting with fists and fighting with, bullets and guns. Maybe that's why this has come along. Maybe that's why the other side is choosing to fall on their sword as far as the NFL and professional sports is concerned, because now they want people out in the streets fighting and killing each other.
Oh, I think there's no question about that. Absolutely no question about that. Everything is coming to the crescendo, just like I wrote, you know. It's all coming to a head.
Yeah, this refuse fascism says a regime step by step. This is another nightmare. A regime step by step discarding basic democratic rights, targeting group after group, and suppressing dissent and resistance. Now, who's actually doing that again? Suppressing dissent and resistance? A regime unleashing the violence of white supremacists, anti-Semites, and fascist thugs. This is fascism, a qualitative change in how society is governed. History has shown that fascism must be stopped before it becomes too late. This nightmare must end. Millions feel this and ache with the question of how to stop this unrelenting horror. The stakes are nothing less than the future of humanity and the planet itself. Who will end this nightmare? We will. Only the determined struggle of millions of people acting together with courage and conviction can drive this regime from power. On November 4th, 2017, we will gather in the streets and public squares of cities and towns across the country, at first many thousands, declaring that this whole regime is illegitimate and that we will not stop until our single demand is met. The nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. Our protests must grow day after day and night after night, thousands becoming hundreds of thousands, and then millions determined to act to put a stop to this grave danger that the Trump-Pence regime poses to the world by demanding that this whole regime be removed from power. Our actions will reflect the values and of respect for all of humanity and the world we want. The world we want. Sounds an awful lot like the slogans of the UN to me. In stark contrast.
That reminds me of Parag Khanna, the world they want.
Yeah, that's their slogan. Another thing they said in here that was a red flag to me, is they said something about we met in plenary. They use the word plenary. That's another one of those words that the UN documents like to use a lot.
Well, it's a governmental term. Even our Congress, I think, I can't give you the exact definition of it, but I think it's like a legislative type term. I'll have to look it up. I'll have to look that up.
Well, let's look it up now. Definition plenary. But my point is, how often do you hear anybody on the street, rank and file people, using the word plenary?
Not often.
Never. Okay, plenary. Complete in every aspect. Fully attended or constituted by all entitled to be present. That's the definition from Merriam-Webster.
That could apply to anything, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, our determination to persist and not back down will compel the whole world to take note. Every force and faction in the power structure will be forced to respond to our demand. The cracks and divisions among the powers already evident today will sharpen and widen as we draw more and more people forward to stand up. All of this could lead to a situation where this illegitimate regime is removed from power. Excuse me. But he's illegitimate regime. He was democratically elected. Okay? Well, not democratically. Sorry, I'm falling into the narrative. He was elected with the system of government that we have here in the United States. which, yes, is rigged. But the point is it's still the Electoral College system is not illegitimate. And that's what they're getting at here. Spread the word. Organize now, they say. Be a part of making history. Don't let it be said that you stood aside when there was still a chance to stop a regime that imperils humanity and the earth itself. Join in taking to the streets and the public squares day after day, night after night, demonstrating that in the name of humanity, we refuse, all caps, to accept a fascist America. So
it's almost kind of a joke in a way. It's just
It is a joke, except for one thing. These people are engaging in seditious activities.
Yeah.
This is the same type of tactic. Again, we talked about the color revolutions in various countries. I think what's going to happen is these people are going to start riots. They're going to start violence in cities all across the country. There'll be looting. There'll be all kinds of things going on. And then ultimately, because the idea is to try to provoke a big response. Because if they can get a big response in the police state, that will delegitimize further the administration in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it will, even for the people that support the administration and that voted for Trump. It will delegitimize him because they're allowing it to happen.
Yeah.
So if they don't put a stop to it pretty damn quick, they are going to be losers on both sides. Because I know if they don't put a stop to this, vote for a Republican, actually, I probably won't vote at all because
there'll be
no point.
Yeah, I'm very thoroughly disappointed with Trump. Not the least of which, I mean, look at Sessions. I mean, all these people doing this stuff, and where's the investigation going on? What's going on with that? You know, and here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. This Refuse Fascism group received $50,000 from George Soros' Tides Foundation. I've got the Form 990 right here. $50,000. There's a lot of other... let's see if I can find it in here. Yeah, here we go. We're almost up to the break. I'll tell you what, let me go ahead and take the break, and we'll continue on the other side, and we're also going to get into Vicky's writings here in just a moment, because she's got some valuable information that dovetails perfectly with what we're talking about here. Stay with us. This is Govern America, Darren Weeks, Vicky Davis, and we'll be back here in just a moment.
Of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is the second hour of Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. And it continues to be the 30th of September, 2017, as we get right back into it, talking about this group called Refuse Fascism, which is calling for basically civil unrest, civil war, which they plan to start on November 4th, which, you know...
Well, it actually sounds like they're calling for revolution, which is sedition and treason.
That is what they're calling for, and it is sedition. And they are funded by an organization called the Alliance for Global Justice. And that's the thing. Before the break, I had mentioned that they received $50,000 from the Tides Foundation. I have to correct that. It's not entirely true. It's through this other organization they receive their money. This Alliance for Global Justice Corporation is the group that receives the Soros money, and then they pass it on to the other groups that don't necessarily have their own tax-exempt organization. So
yeah, that's kind of like NED, the National Endowment for Democracy.
Yeah.
That operates in the same way, and that's funded by our own government. So you've got NED funded by our government, and NED funds other nonprofits, all in the cause of the color revolutions.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is this group, this Alliance for Global Justice, which also funds Refuse Fascism, the group we've been talking about here, they have, as on their Form 990, you see $52,000 came in from the New World Foundation. The New World Foundation, which whose address is 666 West End Avenue, New York, New York.
Wow. Talk about a psyop there, huh?
Well, and I had to check here to make sure that wasn't the same building that Jared Kushner's 666, but his is Fifth Avenue. What is with these people? And there's another one of these things in here, too, with the address of 666. Let's see. Where is it?
Well, somebody told me recently that communism really is based on, it's Luciferianism. It's,
Yeah, that I totally believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a private donor, I guess, Susan Benjamin. Her address is 666. What is with these people? Well, I think we know. I think we know what's with them. But this New World Foundation, I believe Hillary Clinton was on the board of directors or something. I read that somewhere. Let me see. New World Foundation.
There's one that's a Better World Foundation, too. So there are so many foundations. You know, if our government is so broke, what they really should do is eliminate the tax deductibility of all these nonprofits, make them all profit-making, make them pay taxes.
Yeah, according to the Wikipedia page, the New World Foundation is a liberal foundation based in New York. It supports organizations that work on behalf of civil rights and that seek to encourage participation of citizens in American democracy. It was founded in 1954 by Anita McCormick Blaine, a prominent member of the McCormick family. Okay, but skipping down here, during the early 1960s, the New World Foundation's goal was to aid education and promote better intergroup and international relations. During the 1970s, the foundation supported various civil rights and community projects. Hillary Clinton, there it is, whom Marion Wright Edelman had mentored, was on the board from 1982 to 1988 and was its chair for some of that time, including 1987.
Yeah, I don't know why we are funding with our tax dollars all of these organizations that are trying to destroy our country.
Yes.
And I'm not happy about the ones on the right either. I'd like to see the whole law concerning foundations, nonprofits, charitable organizations reviewed and cut, just completely cut, make the big ones like Ford Foundation, Rockefeller, make them spend out that money and be done with them, gone forever. Because this cross-generational manipulation of our social and political environment has just, it's gone too far. I mean, they're destroying our country.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a... The New World Foundation gave $52,000 to the Alliance for Global Justice. And then number two on the list is Soros' Tides Foundation, weighing in at $50,000 with their donation. So it is by proxy, this other group is funded by Soros and others. But there is a big... You know, this is all tied in with the Clintons and all that crowd and Soros. Why isn't any of this being shut down? If they're funding seditious activities, why aren't they being looked at? That's my question.
Mm-hmm. I think it's because it's a contest exactly like I said, and that's why they aren't shutting it down, because it's a big game to them, and you know, they're going to let us fight it out.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. They want to do that. Tell you what, I got a call on Kentucky from Kentucky, and hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Jared, Vicki. Great show as always. Dan in Kentucky.
Hi there.
Couple things.
Hi.
When I've been monitoring legislative hearings, plenary session meant in the past when we would give testimony about something, trying to stop something, and they would go into a closed session where they had full authority to decide something. And the only way we ever beat this in Frankfort, Kentucky, was to cite a point of order that forced them to close down the hearing because they were doing something illegal. I did that in Washington, D.C. and in Frankfort here, and they really don't like that. But once they go into plenary and you haven't raised a point of order, then they can do whatever they want. So that fits what you said about the U.N. That's a U.N.-type word, but it's also a closed legislative-type word.
Yeah.
Now, on the 666 thing, 666 in Luciferian ideology represents the magic square, you know, like if you can count vertically, horizontally, or diagonally a square, and they add up to the same number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all kinds of things they said where it represents the name of Nero, because Roman emperors had three names and all that. But really, 666 stands for the planet Venus, which is the morning star and the evening star and is the bearer of light. Hence, Venus is Lucifer. Now, their idea is that there are 21 first magnitude visible stars. You can check this in astronomy. There are 21 stars that you can see with the naked eye. Okay? So Venus, meaning the morning or evening star, the flexibility of Lucifer being the father of lies and bringing the false light, is the 22nd star. Well, in the Hebrew alphabet, the Kabbalah, which is Luciferian, uses the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet in the paths and the tree of life and all stuff in the Kabbalah. And so that's another 22. And even before that, Robert Graves, who wrote the books that became I, Claudius on Masterpiece Theater,
mm-hmm.
he showed that the ancient Illuminati used 22 sacred trees for the same thing, defining Lucifer. In fact, the oak tree, which was used by the pagans, the Druids, David Icke, who's, I think, a disinformation expert, his name Icke means oak in German. Eiche means oak. And Ashcroft, under Bush, ash and oak and all of these trees and all of these Kabbalah paths and all of these different magnitude stars are like 22 paths or ways to manipulate and control people. So Alice Bailey wrote about all this. You all mentioned this before, that the Lucis Trust was the Lucifer Trust.
Yes.
And so Satan is hiding all this, and this is because psychopaths run the world and people do not use the rules of evil to deal with it. In fact, there aren't many places where you can find the rules about evil. I've come up with eight of them. And if we don't know the rules how to deal with evil, then we're toast. Because the Bible says put on the armor of righteousness, but, you know, people can get self-righteous and then they don't know what that is.
Right.
So you're exposing a lot here about Soros and all of this, but in The Controversy of Zion by Douglas Reed, wonderful, wonderful book, he stated that in 1943, the communists infiltrated under FDR to have card files on all the communist moles that they were protecting during World War II, because we were aligned with Stalin. And in 1943 and since then, sedition has become a non-crime in the U.S. And that's why none of this is getting prosecuted, because the communists have been active in this country that long.
Yeah, definitely. The enemy is definitely inside the gate. You know, what you mentioned earlier about the Lucifer Publishing Company, or the Lucis Trust, Alice Bailey's organization?
Yeah.
We have up on the homepage of the website at governamerica.com a section called The Guilty. And I want to call everybody's attention to this. Excuse me. Because I don't think I've ever really talked about it. But there's a section. It's in black. It's really easy to find because it's Halloween colors. And that's on purpose. The Guilty. Links to organizations, secret societies, and think tanks we consider our enemy. The top of the list is the Lucifer Publishing Company. And I have a note here, the spiritual foundation of the UN. And that link links directly over to the LucisTrust.org page, where they explain their history. They try to explain it away by talking about the esoteric meaning of Lucifer. You know?
Yeah.
The true,
yeah, exactly.
The fact of the matter is that they couldn't sell books to people because nobody wanted to buy books from Lucifer's publishing company. Imagine that.
That's right. Cool. Good for
what
you.
A surprise.
Good for you. And then the same with Albert Pike, Morals and Dogma. He talks about how Masonic stuff is really for Lucifer. And that's hidden in his book, too. So they hide it in plain sight sometimes because Satan's the father of lies.
Yeah, exactly. So this is what we're up against, ladies and gentlemen. It is truly a spiritual battle, whether people want to face that or not. And I think it's very apparent as we see the forces aligning on the other side, targeting Christian fascism, that this is only going to get worse unless Christians stand up and quit waiting to get beamed out of here in the rapture and actually be the salt and light that they were commanded to be. It's time to actually make your voice count for something. Dan, I appreciate that.
We know what good or evil is.
I'm sorry, Vicky. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that it would almost seem as if whoever came up with that rapture thing almost was working for a satanic force, because if you sit back and wait, then you lose.
Yeah. Well,
Vicky, you're absolutely right, because Schofield and his predecessors, he was a con man, and there were some predecessors of Schofield that were also con men, and dispensationalism was set up and the rapture in order to change what early Christianity thought about repentance and making amends. And Christianity was really changed in the last 150 years to come up with this new dispensationalism and the rapture. So you're exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, the thing is that even if Christians, and I realize religious dogma, religious doctrine is very steeped. People get very steeped in this, and it gets to be impossible to dislodge them from it. So, fine. You want to believe in the rapture? Fine. Believe in the rapture. But that's no substitute for you to not do anything while you're down here. You know, before you get beamed out and leaving this world to a cesspool of filth and absolute waste, a spiritual, moral, and political wasteland, you have a responsibility as long as you're breathing breath and your feet are still on the ground. So if you want to believe in the rapture, fine, believe in the rapture, but you still have no excuse to be to be active while you're here. Dan, thanks a lot for
Darren,
your call.
That's why I tell people that choice is more important than belief. You can believe whatever you want, but God chose us, put us here to choose good and not evil. And if we choose good and not evil, then we'll come to good beliefs and his true beliefs instead of something we want to believe out of our ego or what somebody who's trying to convert us into some evil path is trying to convince us about.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Hey, thanks.
Interesting.
Thanks a lot for the call there, Dan. God bless you.
God bless you all.
All right, bye-bye. There he is, Dan.
That was a good call. I'd almost rather listen to him than me.
Yeah, we got some good callers out there, and we have some really good, we got good people all throughout the country. But we need to hear from them. We need them to stand up and be counted. Because the clock is ticking. And I'm not just talking about November 4th. I'm talking about everything that's going on with our country today. We have, I mentioned earlier that the NFL has been in bed with the Defense Department. I have a, believe it or not, a PBS report that Defense Department paid NFL millions of taxpayer dollars to salute troops. You know, promoting this idea of thanking the troops, which, honestly, I mean, the troops, I'm conflicted on this. Because these are some of the most patriotic people, and they enter into these war scenarios ignorant. And how do I know they're ignorant? Because they wouldn't do it if they weren't ignorant. They're recruited, most of them, probably out of high school. And they're kids, and they're promised the world, and they sign up, and they find themselves into a situation which most of the time they regret. But this whole idea of thanks to the veterans, that's just promoting this thing that everyone who serves in the military is a patriotic hero, and we have to honor them, which is a complete. Yeah. Antithesis of what they are is second victims.
You know what? At this point, I am really suspicious of everything, absolutely everything. You know, what was the ulterior motive behind the whole idea of the NFL and patriotism? And, you know, the Pentagon used Hollywood during World War II for propaganda, and I don't think they ever stopped.
No, you know, I don't think they have either.
Everything that comes out of Hollywood is propaganda. So, you know, what is real and what is fake? What is for manipulation? I just feel like, you know, manipulation is coming from all directions all the time.
Yeah. Well, you have the like you said, the Hollywood propaganda, and then we have the media. I don't think Operation Mockingbird ever really ended. You know, maybe they call it something different now, and it's got another, it's evolved into something more. But the reality is everything, all of the key institutions are being used for propagandistic purposes. And $5 million is what the Defense Department paid between 2011 and 2014 to, quote, honor U.S. soldiers and veterans at games. Well, the NFL can't honor them without being paid millions of dollars at a time when our country is massively in debt?
Yeah, it's not really honoring them anyway. It's just, you know, commercial timeout.
It's promotion. It is a commercial. This is exactly what it is. It's a commercial. Hey, you want to be a hero too? Sign up. Go to our war zones. Get blown to bits. Hey, your pieces, your body will be scattered all over the Middle East. You'll inhale the depleted uranium dust into your lungs so you can die if you survive bodily without getting blown to bits. You'll die a slow, agonizing death of depleted uranium while you flash back to the war zones for the rest of your life every time a firecracker goes off. Congratulations.
And don't worry about the job that you would have done in this country, because we'll import the guy that shot you, we'll import him as a refugee into the country to take your job.
While you're over there fighting the big bag boogeyman over there so we don't have to face them at home. your country's being flooded with foreigners and being stolen right out from under you. I guess I'm just pissed off today.
Well, me too.
Yeah, so, but, you know, here's the thing, Vicky. And let's see. We have New Jersey. What's the name of this? NJ.com, anyway. At the time, Congress and the president have imposed caps on military spending. The Department of Defense has paid at least $6 million in taxpayer money to 16 NFL teams across the country, including $377,500 to the Jets, with the bulk spent by the National Guard. U.S. Senator Jeff Flake last week, and this is from May of 2015, called out the New Jersey Army National Guard for the spending, which in part paid for a segment at Jets games, Jets home games, in which soldiers featured on the big screen, thanked for their service and given tickets to the game. Now, here's the thing about it. If the NFL is taking money for this, what else is the NFL taking money for? Which leads me, again, to the whole idea that all of this stuff with the NFL, and I didn't mean to get so involved in this, because I do think it's distractionary in many cases. However, I do think it's important because we have to realize that this is relationship is going on here. And we have to realize, I think this whole thing is staged.
There's an equal time, too. If they take money from our government to promote one side, can't they take money from the other side to promote communism, which is apparently what they're doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so and what you're getting at right here, this business of taking a knee. And, you know, I don't even like that term.
I don't either.
Taking a knee.
Me.
You know, I makes me want to take my knee and shove it right up.
Take that knee and... We think too much alike.
I took the words out of your mouth, huh? So, but we do have the reason why all this is going on. I discovered it. It was revealed during the annual Homeland Security Threats analysis, which took place on Capitol Hill just days ago.
I do want to talk to you a little bit about election security as well and some of the things that are going on as we deal with countering violent extremism and what's happening and destabilizing us. We watched even this weekend the Russians and their troll farms and their internet folks start hashtagging out take a knee and also hashtagging out boycott NFL. They were taking both sides of the argument this past weekend and pushing them out from their troll farms as much as they could to try to just raise the noise level in America and to make a big issue seem like an even bigger issue as they're trying to push divisiveness in the country. We've continued to be able to see that. We will see that again in our election time. My question for you is, does DHS, you have the responsibility to oversee elections nationwide and to be able to work with our states that organize all their elections within the state. Does DHS have the resources it needs to do on-site assessments for all the states that request it between now and the 2018 elections?
We do have the resources to do it. Not all states have requested it, and I think there's still an issue with some states on whether they want that federal involvement, but we do have the resources.
So I'll see you there. It was the Russians.
Right.
The Russians are responsible for making the NFL do this.
Well, they continue to push this whole Russian narrative because they want to control the elections. There's a lot of money, obviously, power and money at stake in terms of who controls the elections. And in combination with that, the idea of a new combatant command that is global in scope, it's cyber command, which is a military command covering cyberspace, which covers the whole world. I mean, you want to talk about going for, you know, the whole bag of marbles. That's what we're talking about in terms of cyberspace, a combatant command for cyberspace.
You know, what's interesting is that they're promoting this idea. In fact, they said it right there in that clip we just played about you know, states accepting money, asking for help, you know, the secure election systems and all this, when in fact it was the Department of Homeland Security themselves that hacked into the election in the states. You remember that? The story came out?
Yep. Absolutely, yes. They hacked the election systems of several states, but they only admitted that after it was proven. One of the secretaries of state, I can't remember which one, maybe from Kansas, he's the one that came out and said to DHS, it was you that were hacking our systems.
Yeah.
Because our guys caught you.
So they're pointing the finger at the Russians when it's them. It is they who are guilty of doing... It seems to be always the case. Every time that they are guilty of anything, they accuse everybody else of doing exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. We're at the bottom of the hour already, and that's pretty incredible, too. Already halfway through the program. It's flying by today. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks, and we'll be back in a few. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. GovernAmerica.com is the website. GovernAmerica.com. And the phone number is 844-646-8376. That's toll-free 844-6-GOVERN. I'm going to be discussing some of what Vicki has written here in just a moment. We have a couple of calls on the line, however. First of all, we have... Sorry, I want to make sure I had something set here. Dallas, Texas is on the line. Let's go ahead and take Dallas, Texas. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Ken from West Virginia.
Oh, how did you're not Dallas, Texas. How did I manage to mess that up? Sorry.
I don't know. anyway, I just have something brief and then you can get off to Dallas. About the national anthem and, you know, standing or sitting or whatever. That's not new. I grew up around Washington D.C. and as a you know during the Vietnam War I was you know young and I can remember there was a controversy about at the baseball stadium like and I was taken when I was you know maybe 13, 14 to a D.C. stadium right there in D.C. and there was all this I just heard this like through the cultural noise, you know, at the time about, we'd have to stand up for the national anthem, blah, blah, blah. And I was taken there and I saw all this. Now, this was in Washington, D.C., and these were white people.
Yeah.
Only white people went to the baseball games, and they would, when the national anthem played, you'd see, like, few people stand up, you know, but most of the time they were just taking their seats or going and getting their hot dogs. So this whole thing is, you know, it's part of the controversy is being generated, just like back in the Vietnam War era, you know. And so, I mean, if Colin Kaepernick were saying that he was taking a knee and he was praying for the hope for the outcome of the game, he would be a hero. Now, there's the difference of what. And if they all said they were down on their knees praying, you know,
what it boils down to is
the whole perspective would be 100% different.
Yeah, well, that's true. And here's the thing. And I say here's the thing too much, and I'm trying to break myself of that. The point is that I'm conflicted because I'm not a big fan of the federal flag. I'm not a big fan of the federal government. I'm not a big fan of anthems and uniforms and all of this stuff because to me it represents the state and. Even though I'm not an anarchist, I'm also not a big fan of a strong central government either. And so your patriotism, your loyalty, your allegiance
Isn't that the word, allegiance? To the flag? You know, all of this stuff that children learned in school, I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. That's conditioning. That's support your government, no matter what you do, what they do. I have a problem with that. And so on the one hand, these flag-waving patriotic people who are all down on the NFL for what they're doing here, disrespecting the flag, you know, and disrespecting the national anthem. Oh, the national anthem, I guess, is racist now. I just saw the other day, too, that Dr. Seuss is racist, and I haven't even had a chance to look into why. Everything's racist. Anything that's been Americana in the past, anything that's been traditional in the past, has got to come down now. This is literally a war against our entire country. And that's why I'm prone when these institutions, when these entities tend to come under attack, that's why where I kind of come to the defense. Even though I'm not all in with the flag, I'm not all in with the anthem. But I also know why these people are doing this, and it is for seditious reasons. Go ahead, Vicki.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, the thing with Dr. Seuss is because Melania Trump donated a Dr. Seuss book library. So the leftist librarian said, you know, now Dr. Seuss is racist.
Okay, see, but, I missed that one.
Yeah, the thing is, though, that, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and all of that stuff, if I hadn't done that as a youngster, if they hadn't developed patriotism in me, I wouldn't be researching now. I wouldn't be working night and day to try to save our country. I wouldn't care. Why would I care? If I had no patriotism, why would I care?
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. You know, and I wonder how long has it been since children have not said the Pledge of Allegiance in the schools? More importantly, how long has it been since children haven't been allowed to pray in schools? There's your big problem.
Yeah. And how long has it been since they've actually taught them to read and write?
Well, there is that. See, you always want to bring us into technical stuff.
I know.
You think the schools are for education? All right. Kent, what were you going to say? You forgot.
supposedly, Dr. Seuss was, you know, during the Second World War, he was a propagandist, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, was an artist. And I guess he made some very derogatory depictions of the Japanese. So that's where they the racist. And, you know, it's just like, you know, Mark Twain is a racist because blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Can't have Huckleberry Finn.
One of those things that people are going to crank on about. But I think that's the origin of the racist thing. And too, they, you know, the idea of it coming from, you know, the person in the White House, his wife. So.
Yeah, you know what? And that points out a real problem with our education system is that they don't teach the children to think. When you're looking at things in history, you have to think of it within the historical context. You know, if you go back at any point in time in history in any country in the world and you take what happened back then and port it to today and say you're bad because of what happened then, it's ridiculous. It's stupid. It doesn't apply because the conditions today are not the same as they were back then.
Yeah.
So we don't know.
RT had an art. Go ahead.
You go ahead. Go ahead.
Somebody go ahead.
Yeah, RT had an article about a week ago about the there was a woman who's taking her position in having a statue made in the House of Parliament over there in England, London, and she was taking her position amongst all these other men of the past, and they went through like from Bomber Harris to Lord Nelson to all these guys that conquered Malaysia and India, and the people had these larger than life statues to them, and they went through and they recited all the things that they said. And I mean, they make like what they suggested these people in the American Civil War. They make them look like choir boys. I'm telling you, they were like, you know. you know, if you know they had an insurrection in India, and he says, well, they can for one of our men, there's a million of them, and you know, it was really astonishing, you know. So that's a perspective, you know. So
yeah,
but there's no, I don't think there's a clamor to tear them down in Parliament, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're at war, the enemy has to be the enemy. You can't have a friend as your enemy, and so you demonize your enemy. I mean, that's the way it works.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Kent, thank you for your call. I'm going to go ahead and move on and take the next call, but I appreciate your call there, friend. I'll talk to you later. All right, there he is, Kent in West Virginia. Let's move along here, and now I think we have Dallas, Texas on the line. Dallas, you're on the air.
Oh, hi there, Darren, Vicki, this is Lark.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Lark.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Listen, I just want to touch on three things, and I'll try to be brief. First of all, you mentioned the young West Point cadet or graduate who had the Che Guevara T-shirt, was embracing communism. Well, of course, I think what we can do is we can pin the blame on the Army War College. Army War College actually uses textbooks as part of their curriculum written by Amitai Etzioni.
Oh, good grief.
He's the founder of the Institute of Communitarian Policy Studies.
At George Washington.
At George Washington University. Yeah. And so one of the books, for example, and the guy's, you know, written, of course, he has lots of help to write his books because he gets basically free labor from graduate students. But one title is Security First for a Moral Muscular Foreign Policy. This was written in 2008. So what these military leaders, future leaders, are being brainwashed with, and this is not just in the Army, it's throughout the armed services, is this idea that what takes precedent over everything else is national security, safety, security, and protection. Okay, so they're infused with this whole idea that first things first, you got to secure, you got to make safe, you got to protect, and this underpins the bedrock legal doctrine of communitarian international law, which is called R2P or responsibility to protect, and so that should cause pause for alarm right there, and then. Then, too, I want to mention this whole idea of Lucifer and the United Nations. First of all, the United Nations itself is a religious organization because of something that anybody can do a search for is simply called the Temple of Understanding. The Temple of Understanding, in which they propound a humanist doctrine. We can see these same words in like the Humanist Manifesto. We can see them in the underpinning of international law being communitarian law, which is practiced at the International Court of Justice at The Hague. And
Lark, and I have a question. I have a question for you, Lark. Is that pantheism?
Yeah.
Is that pantheism?
I would say so, because, see, unlike the communists wanted to do away, so they say, with religion, what they call superstition. But the communitarians, by contrast, embrace religion. In other words, the more the merrier. So it's fair to say that communitarianism is really a rebranding of capitalism and communism.
Third way.
And I wanted to point out, I'm sorry?
She said third way.
The third way, indeed. And that's what keeps everybody at odds with each other and at each other's throat, because it's just classic divide and conquer strategy to keep everybody divided. Because if they're divided, they remain conquered as a people. But I want to point out that there was a website for a long time. It was called Lucifer.org. And it's currently under construction, and they've scrubbed all the content. Much of it went way back into the early 90s. But if you do a search on the Internet...
Well, you can go to archive.org.
You can't pull it up. It's all been scrubbed.
Really? They scrubbed the archive.org copy, too, huh? The Wayback Machine.
Well, no. The archive.org exists, but the website, lucifer.org lucifer.com, all the content has been scrubbed.
Well, if you go to archive.org, the Wayback Machine, you can put in any website, and many of them have copies of, you know, so you can see what websites look like when they first launched, you know, when the Internet first launched, and there's snapshots of different sites.
I know, but Darren, I'd like to see someone try it, because I have already more than once.
Okay.
The content's been scrubbed.
Well, it's too late. Sorry.
But here's the interesting thing. It was the largest online repository for all information relative to memetic engineering and memetic warfare. And so, you know, a lot of people don't realize the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. Remember the proverbial tale of the blind men and the elephant.
Right.
You know, and Vicky touches upon this all the time. See, the enemy is really an environment of environments within a community of communities. And you have to wrap your head around that, but we're also pointing to something called systems thinking. And so at the end of the day, when we talk about memetic warfare, we have to define our terms. And remember, the word meme, M-E-M-E, was coined by an atheist named Richard Dawkins in his 1976 book entitled The Selfish Gene. Because, see, a meme operates much like a mind virus. In fact, Richard Brody, who used to be with Microsoft and developed Microsoft Word, he wrote a book called Virus of the Mind. And what I have seen, because I used to study copywriting back about 2004 to 2006, and I have seen that within propaganda circles, intel circles, advertising, public relations circles. This whole idea of meme warfare is quite prominent today. So
yeah,
I would recommend that anybody listening today, if they want to see how meme warfare is waged, I mean, we can look, for example, at an article that you can read on the Internet. It's called DARPA 2.0, The Rise of the Narrative Networks. And so what they try to do is they try to link through networking these people who are propagating these, what I would call, communitarian memes, and or they're designed to disrupt and destabilize, demoralize anyone that challenges the globalist worldview today. So my take on all of this is, at the end of the day, unless there is an actual strategy to combat this, I mean, let's face it, if you're of the left, say you're brought up indoctrinated in a public school, you live in California, you know, like my niece, you go to a university, you get a PhD in education policy studies or whatever the hell. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you basically have been enlisted into a communitarian army to basically do wage war upon the American people. And so that's really what it boils down to. I know it sounds perhaps slightly off topic. I don't know. But Vicky's latest article at TV OINews.com
.net.
Was about the military, and she's exactly right. I mean, see, capitalism today is not free enterprise. It has nothing to do with
You're absolutely
market.
Right. It isn't.
Right.
So if you're of the left, why wouldn't you oppose capitalism, you know, if you're young and impressionable? Now, if you're of the right and you don't particularly like people with alternative lifestyles, shall we say, or, all these other kinds of things, and you were raised Christian home, maybe you were even homeschooled, why wouldn't you virulently oppose people of the left who say, call themselves Democrats, say, or quasi-socialists of some kind?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is how they keep us divided and conquered. But I would urge anyone to just look it up, Virus of the Mind, Mimetic Engineering, and Mimetic Warfare, and realize that mimetic warfare is only one aspect of warfare, because there's also nonlinear warfare, there's psychological warfare, asymmetrical warfare, and, they're terraforming the environment, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're being assaulted on all sides. And yes, you could say it's an economic and a spiritual war as well that's mm-hmm. being waged against us. But again, mm-hmm. I just hearken back to this elephant in the room that no one seems to be able to identify.
Yeah.
And until we identify the elephant in the room that's causing the discord and this huge transformation that we're witnessing in our lifetimes, we simply cannot have intelligent discussions.
Yeah.
You know what? You're so right, Lark. And where I was going with that article is that when George Shultz was working with Mikhail Gorbachev in the 1980s, before the end of the Cold War, they were talking about information systems and how important information systems are going to be. Okay, when you skip up towards today and this whole Russian hacking thing, what the intelligence agencies are saying is that the Russians are waging information warfare, irregular war using information, disinformation, whatever. That which makes me think that our guy, who was the equivalent guy, Art Zabrowski, father of net-centric warfare, it seems that what the military did and the intelligence agencies did, or at least the military, is that they focused on hardware and software technology, so that you could have a soldier out in the field with his cell phone, calling in for supplies or calling in for a bomb to be dropped on somebody like that. And as if they had completely of information warfare.
We missed that sentence. Can you repeat it?
Oh, yeah. I said as if they had entirely missed the idea of information warfare, which is totally intellectual warfare against people. It's gaslighting. It's, making the police seem like the bad guys, or making them seem like the really good guys when they weren't good, or, just information to create information chaos so that you funnel some information to people of a particular profile or a particular area. You funnel different information to people for a different purpose in another area, so that people believe that they're actually living in different worlds. And I say that all the time. My God, what world are these people living?
Like split universes.
Yes. Yeah, because it's they're certainly not living in the same world that I am.
Yeah.
Well, if you can control someone's mind, you can control their thoughts and their actions. And that's made clear every day in this information age. But, you know, Vicky, I hope that you're really enjoying the correlations between the thinking of men like Christopher Alexander, Anthony Judge, and Paul Niquette. These are the men who are older than we are that have made this world. They exemplify the kinds of thinking and the personages which many people have never heard of that have shaped our world.
Can you send me their names? I don't know their names. I'm just struggling.
I sent it to you an email. Again, the names are Christopher Alexander, Anthony Judge, and Paul Niquette.
Okay.
And I kid you, you know, Paul Niquette is the man who coined the word software in 1953. And Anthony Judge, these are all encyclopedia entries online, by the way. Anthony Judge is the one I call King of the Syndicalist. Remember, syndicalism is a variant of socialism. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the National Governors Association, the U.S. Conferences of Mayors, the American Medical Association, the ISO, any number of what we call our professional trade associations, and then we combine that with blue-collar trade unions, what we have is syndicalism at work.
Hey, Lark, I'm up against the clock here. You want to finish up over the break, or?
I don't mind, but it's up to you, too.
Okay, hang on just a moment. Stay with us, folks. Hour number three of Govern America is straight ahead, and we're going to talk about Vicky's writings here in the next hour. Don't go away.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America, hour number 3. As we continue on here, I have Lark from Dallas, Texas on the line right now. Of course, Vicki Davis is here as well. It continues to be the 30th of September, 2017, as we move right into the fall months here. And we're talking a little bit about some of the anarchy and chaos that's going on in this country all across the from sea to shining sea, as they say. Anyway, Lark, I had to cut you off right before we went into the break. I think you were talking about syndicalism. Did you want to finish up real quick?
Yeah, I will. I'll take just another minute, and I'll jump off. I, of course, really appreciate your shows every week, Darren and Vicky. But when you collide together the ideas of quote-unquote capitalism and quote-unquote communism, and then you add in the elements of mercantilism or old-fashioned British mercantilism, which was described by Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations, or what we term today free trade, and then the ideas of syndicalism, and what you see is a whole new appreciation for this thing which is brought into the 21st century, began by this so-called hidden hand. See, the hidden hand of the marketplace is such today that the market state is displacing the nation state. And with regionalism, we see the rise of the city state. For example, San Diego, California, and Tijuana, Mexico are seen as one city-state because they are said to have a commonality of interest, etc. And so syndicalism is important to realize what that is, you know, it was spoken about at some length in Ludwig von Mises' book called Human Action. Remember, he claimed to be an arch opponent of socialism. And this is his opus magnus. You can read it for free on the Internet, Human Action. But he speaks of what he calls collectivism and or corporativism and also syndicalism. And all these governors, for instance, I mean, being members of the National Governors Association, every single one of them, all 50, they give in to the leadership of that collectivist entity called the National Governors Association. And these are, this particular group is, from the beginning, has been behind Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got now, we have the likes of Bill Gates of Microsoft, who practically owns the brand.
Yep.
Yes.
You know, he wants to see everybody have a laptop, you know, in a classroom. You know, every pupil to have a smartphone. And so, unfortunately, there is a hidden hand at work today. But I would suggest that what we're entering into is a time of technological slavery. And, you know, we should rebrand in this post-truth era, that famous quotation from Walt Kelly's Pogo cartoon during World War II. And we should say, we have met the frenemy, and he is us.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Lark? That's exactly where I was going with the invisible fist. The reconciliation of the invisible hand is the invisible fist. And that is the technocratic tyranny.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
It's a great title, too.
Isn't it charming to see these young people at these public demonstrations with their fists thrust into the air?
Yeah.
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 Thanks, guys.
I think
Mark, appreciate the call there, friend. Talk to you.
Most of them have no idea what this is all about.
No, they don't.
Even if they've studied Marxism and think it's great, you know, or communism.
Well, I have no doubt that they're thoroughly indoctrinated. And see, all this comes back to these UN documents like Agenda 21, where they talk about the importance of having children and children having a unique perspective, and children and youth and sustainable development is a chapter of Agenda 21. But children don't have any experience. They don't have any knowledge of the real world. All they know is what their Marxist professors have been taught. So hearing from children, all you're going to hear is regurgitation.
Right. Well, and I also think that you don't really learn to love anybody else until you have your own children. I really don't think you do. I don't think you would learn to care about other people and their problems, not really.
Yeah.
Unless you have your own children, and then you can understand what it is to really care about what is going on in the world, because it affects the thing that you love the most in the world.
Well, I think you can. You have the capacity to love. The way I put it years ago, when I had daughters of my own, is that my capacity to love increased. I found that I had the ability to love more when I had my own children. And it's difficult to explain unless you've been there.
Yeah. Well, maybe I have a jaundiced view. I would grant you that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I just haven't. I'm getting more and more jaundiced all the time myself, honestly. But your article, The Invisible Fist, Military in the Context of Everything Else, is very important, and everybody needs to read it. Everybody needs to study the external links. You just start off talking about The Game, a movie that starred Michael Douglas, where he had a quote about a wealthy banker. Did you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, that was a very interesting movie, and the first time I saw it, I kind of came in to the middle, so I didn't realize that he knew that it was a game, but that in the game there was so much realism that he couldn't tell what was real and what was the game, and so the game became reality.
Mm.
And that's kind of, you know, the at least the way that I feel. You know, I don't know. I mean, I do know what's real and what isn't, but still, there's still nagging doubts. Am I sure it's real? I mean, am I sure that those people exist in California and that they actually did shut down
the freeway?
Was that a movie set? I mean, was that a staged event
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was wondering, we had a limited view of the highway, and I was wondering how much of it,
I thought about that the other week when there were those people that were doing the Luciferian fashion show in a church.
Right.
Was that
interesting?
Yeah.
You saw that too, huh?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If people want to know what we're talking about, if you can go to vigilantcitizen.com, and they got a good write-up on that. Total blasphemous fashion show taking place with, you know, square and compass. I mean, all kinds of Masonic symbols right there in the middle of St. Andrews or something like that?
Yes. Yeah, I think it was. Somewhere.
Yeah, so they got a good write-up on that. But this is more of this paganism and more of this complete and total. I mean, people have just completely lost their minds. But it gives you the example. It shows you just the nature of what we're dealing with here. So this blurring, it seems to be an ongoing theme of everything we talk about here, this blurring of reality, you know, fact versus fiction, and the inability by design of the average person to sort it out.
Uh-huh.
And I think Mark Lark was kind of alluding to some of that, you know, with this meme warfare.
Yes, exactly.
It's you know, everyone's supposed to pick a side, and it's interesting how the advent of social networks, which you would think would offer clarity, has offered confusion. And I think part of the strategy of the World Wide Web, and they do call it the web, is to get people entangled and confused, where before you had time to sort things out when you came across information, now everything is just being thrown at you from all directions that you're not able to reflect and get away. I don't know about you, Vicky, but sometimes I have to just go out on my deck or go out of my barn and sit quietly and just think, you know.
Yes.
Because you got to get away from the noise sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
In order to maintain your sanity, your own peace of mind.
Yeah, that's not clear. I'm succeeding.
Well, sometimes I don't know if I'm succeeding either. Now, Secretary of State George Shultz, you mentioned this, you alluded this earlier during Lark's call. He had a piece that he did called Dictator's Dilemma, which you stumbled across. You got any thoughts on that? I know you do.
Yeah, I do. That was one of the most interesting things. Well, discovering that George Shultz was actually working with Mikhail Gorbachev in the 1980s before the fall of the Berlin Wall, I mean, that was really the clincher on Ronald Reagan's speech. He accepted Leonid Brezhnev's challenge to a battle of systems and ideas. And if you follow the timeline on that, beginning with the Helsinki Final Act, where they agreed to cooperative measures to end the Cold War, going up to Ronald Reagan, where he gave this speech accepting the challenge of the battle of systems ideas, and then you get to the Berlin Wall, 1989, when the Berlin Wall comes down all of a sudden, and all of these communists rush the West. Now, the media was giving us the idea that those people were running towards freedom, but was it really? Or was it really communists rushing the West?
Yeah.
For what would become a war fought on civilian turf.
And are we living with the result of those communists rushing the West today?
I think we absolutely are.
The influence. I refer so often to the book by Jan Kozak. You know, and Not a Shot Is Fired. I think that was such, it's a small treatise that was written, and it's a translation, but he really laid it out in there, in his little manifesto, exactly everything that's going on, and the tactics that are used, from the chants, the slogans, the marches in the streets, the shutting down of all of society, the complete sowing of chaos, to the point where everything is disorganized. And out of the order comes the chaos. Or, I'm sorry, I said it backwards. Out of chaos comes order. They're trying to engineer all of society so it can't function, so the quote-unquote capitalist system has no choice but to collapse.
Yeah, well, and at this point, the order is going to be the invisible fist.
Yes.
It's the ubiquitous computer systems that will control every aspect of everybody's life. And you can look at the education system, the healthcare system, the transportation system, the financial systems, you know, banking or whatever. All of your entire life will be controlled by a system that is beyond your ability to see.
Mm-hmm.
It's an invisible fist.
Well, I think it's already being controlled by this invisible fist technocratic tyranny that you're alluding to, because all you have to do is look at the number of people that are run over by cars because they can't take their eyes off the phone. If people walk out into traffic now, kids in front of cars don't bother looking at traffic because they're so wrapped up in smartphones. And hey, I've got one too. I use it for show prep, to be honest with you. I was just showing my wife the other day. I can watch C-SPAN videos on half the screen while taking notes on the other half of the screen, and so I can figure out where to clip my audio. The only thing I haven't figured out is how to clip it on the phone. There doesn't seem to be any good way of doing that. This enables me to, when I'm waiting at a doctor's office or whatever, to be able to actually go through things and decide at least what needs to be clipped and what isn't. It's a great tool if it's used properly. But I also know that where people are in society right now, it reminds me of, and in fact, when Lark was talking there, I thought of the words of Aldous Huxley when he was at Berkeley, of all places. We've got the audio. Maybe at some point I'm going to have to dig it out and play it on the show. Because he talked about the need, their need, to get people to the point where they love their servitude and they will embrace it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that is exactly what's happened with all of this technology. And the price is artificially low. They did make a deal, I'm sure, with China, you know, for mass production of these computers to keep the price low, because it's a loss leader of an investment, you know, for ultimate control, absolute and total control.
Yeah. So the one thing I didn't know that you revealed in your article is that George Shultz was actually involved in the tutoring of Mikhail Gorbachev.
Yeah, that was a stunner, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, he was working, like you said, you know, prior to the so-called collapse of the Soviet Union, which more and more it's apparent that it was an engineered scenario. But we had behind the scenes the Secretary of State meeting with Mikhail Gorbachev, educating him as to why he needs to open his society. Isn't
right,
that interesting? Now, couldn't we call this sedition? Or treason, actually.
I think the State Department has been... I think they actually have been separated from the United States, going clear back to when the Council on Foreign Relations was created. First president of the Council on Foreign Relations was Elia Root, and he was also Secretary of State. So I think that our State Department really has been a captive of at least the Carnegie Foundation for a long time, for all that time. Mm-hmm. And the Carnegie Foundation, if you go back and back to that book, Merchants of Peace, Carnegie Foundation made that deal with the businessmen for what I call the businessmen's conspiracy in one of the things that I just wrote recently. And their idea was to collapse nation states because they figured military is a function of the nation-state concept under the Westphalian system. So if they disintegrate the nation-state, they disintegrate the military, and there will be peace in the world.
People don't
realize, which is really totally delusional.
People don't realize in the public. I know most Patriot people, if they've been in the Patriot movement, if I can use that vernacular, for any length of time, understand the role of the foundations in the deconstruction of our society. But the average person on the street still to this day believes that foundations are somehow these benevolent entities. And I think, you know, going back to Norman Dodd and his work at exposing the Ford Foundation and, the whole probe into un-American activities, I think this needs to really be promulgated more and more throughout our movement, because I think we have a tendency in the alternative media to touch upon objects and sometimes leave them behind because it's just accepted that people know this stuff. But when we're trying to reach the public and we have an influx of a massive number of people, many of them, to be frank with you, are leftists that have come into our ranks for whatever reason. I mean, maybe they thought 9/11 was a George W. Bush thing, and so they were against Bush, and so they're 9/11 truthers, and this is now a dialectic that belongs to the left somehow. But for whatever, and I'm sure there are plenty of them that have come into our ranks for the sole purpose of being disruptors as well. So you have a fair number of amount of that as well, but Norman Dodd discovered that the Ford Foundation, in fact, they admitted to him, the guy there at the Ford Foundation admitted that their purpose was for the United States to be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union, and so we have the workings of George Shultz working with Mikhail Gorbachev prior to the so-called collapse of the Soviet Union, collaborating on how to do it, how to engineer all of society and ultimately the world to be friendly to communism, basically. Correct?
Right. That's right. And what happened after that is the August coup, and Sam Nunn was just coincidentally in Budapest at an Aspen Institute conference when the coup happened.
Now, when you're talking about the August coup, for those who haven't read your article, she's talking about the coup against Mikhail Gorbachev. The unsuccessful...
Right.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Well, when they supposedly tried to execute a coup while Gorbachev was in the Crimea, supposedly some faction, some hardline faction, tried to take over the Kremlin, and they failed. You know how they failed? We're not sure. But it doesn't make any difference because after Gorbachev came back to the Kremlin, Sam Nunn flew over there and asked the question, well, what about your nukes? Were you able to keep control of your nukes? And Gorbachev didn't answer. So Sam Nunn came back to the United States and said, we've got to help the Soviets with their nukes.
Mm.
And the
it's
the
important
result,
to note that George Shultz had positioned himself that he could fly into Moscow without any media scrutiny.
Which absolutely
makes you wonder. And in fact, when I read that, I was wondering who's really behind this coup, because we've seen the pattern over and over again in recent years about these so-called coups, and I just know too much about how the State Department operates. If they're operating that way today, I'm sure they were operating that way back then.
I'm sure it was a dialectic. Somebody wrote a book called The Perestroika Deception, and I forget, I want to say Anatoly something or other, but I'm not certain of that. I do have the information on it, but that the Gorbachev's plan and his leadership of the country was, and even up to the point of the coup, nobody was executed for the coup, by the way, and that was a Russian first time that anybody tried a coup in Russia that they didn't end up dead, which is a big clue that it was a deception. Because shortly after that, I think it was 1992, Gorbachev was welcomed in this country with open arms, as if the Cold War, communism, as if all of that melted away.
Yeah, he was a hero. I remember that. In fact, Time magazine, I believe, named him Man of the Decade.
They named him Man of the Year 2 years in a row, or maybe it was Man of the Year 1 year and Man of the Decade the next year.
Yeah, I mean, he was hailed as a big hero. And this guy is the biggest communist that ever lived.
Right, and he set up shop. And he set up shop at the Presidio in I always want to call her Mooney Pelosi because she reminds me of a Mooney. But Nancy Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi helped acquire the Presidio, put it in a trust, and set him up out there. And that's where Gorbachev had the State of the World Forum and a sapiential circle of people, you know, that were advisors. And he worked on all kinds of stuff. He worked on the Green Schools Initiative. And in around 2005, 2006, an initiative came through the Idaho legislature for what? The Green Schools. Mm. Okay, the whole environmental movement, I believe, was the, at the 1990 Moscow Global Forum, and I think you played that a couple weeks ago for people.
Yes.
That's when Gorbachev brought up the idea of the Green Cross, which is the to elevate the environment to a higher level of consciousness for the people, and also so that you could have a common enemy, you know, pollution, environmental degradation, and whatever.
Yeah, call back to the report from Iron Mountain, where you have to have a substitute for war to control the people.
Yeah, and that's also where pantheism comes in. That's where I got that term pantheism, as I was reading. The religion that's closest to pantheism, according to this one article, is Hinduism. And since I'm not really a religious person, all of that is new to me. And I would really, if we could ever find anybody that could talk about Hinduism and pantheism and, you know, do a reconciliation of those things for us, that would be really awesome.
Well, it certainly is a very, you know, I look at the ceremonies that they engage in, even at the unveiling of Agenda 21 at the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development back in 1992, where they were having literally a pantheistic celebration, ceremony, ritual outside of the event, beating drums and, you know, this whole indigenous thing that they had going on out there. And it really, to me, struck home, brought home the nature of the whole gathering. Tell you what, we're at the bottom of the hour. We'll continue. Stay with us. This is Govern America. All right, we're in the home stretch of the broadcast, final half hour of the show. And what is always the fastest 3 hours in talk radio? This is Govern America. Talking about the Iron Fist, the Invisible Fist, which is Vicky's latest article on the technocratic tyranny, it's on TVOINews.net, TVOINews.net, the Voice of Idaho, TVOINews.net. Her other websites are thetechnocratictyranny.com and channelingreality.com. Talking about the tutoring of Mikhail Gorbachev by our Secretary of State back in the 1980s, and the fact that all of the collapse of the so-called collapse of the Soviet Union was apparently engineered. It certainly seems to be that way. So the world could be flooded with communism, and now we have what we're living with today, with anarchists and chaos in the streets decades later.
It is the ideological battle that Reagan agreed to.
Right, and you were talking about the non-Luger cooperative threat reduction legislation to basically the coup against Mikhail Gorbachev, whether real or promulgated, justified the system of tracking for failed.
Global transportation system. That's right.
Yeah.
And that's where you have the melding of the military mission of total domain awareness and the domestic mission of traffic management.
And that's really where we want to go with this thing, because we're living literally with militaristic technology, which has integrated itself throughout all of our lifestyles, from GPS systems, which started off militaristic. But all of the, you know, I mentioned smartphones and the internet, really all of this stuff is military type of technology. The surveillance that's going on throughout the country on the general population.
Right. And you know what the purpose of that is? It's the integration of military function into the domestic society, because the intent of the globalist agenda is to collapse the nation state. Mm-hmm. So if you collapse the nation state, you eliminate the military, so the military function has to be transferred. And where is it being transferred? It's being transferred to law enforcement.
Yeah, and here we go with the 1033 program that we mentioned earlier, and we've mentioned a number of times on the broadcast. This 1033 program, where you have tanks rolling in your streets. You know, I've referred often to the Boston bombing, the alleged Boston bombing, and what all happened there. And I, you know, setting aside whether or not it was real, there are people who will swear up and down it was, and maybe it was. Maybe there were real victims. I don't know. I wasn't there. But we do know that from some of the people that were there, that they were holding a drill at the time of the real event, which there is no reason why you would do that unless you're trying to cause confusion, unless you're trying to cause chaos. And my thinking on that, and the reason why I keep coming back to that, Vicky, is because to me that was such a monumental rehearsal. I look at that as being a huge conditioning process for the American people. I look at it as a huge step forward for police state integration with our domestic law enforcement, the fusing the military and the domestic police force together. When you have literal tanks, and I mean, at the time, there were a number of different pictures that were being carried in the Daily Mail, ironically, out of the UK, who sometimes covers the United States better than many of our domestic publications, ironically. But they had pictures of people sheltering in place, looking out their windows. There were police searching door to door, literally door to door, not just police, but militaristic, you know, soldiers in uniforms searching house to house over this, for this, you know, pair of teenagers.
Yeah. Well, what I'm writing about, it's serious business. It's real. I mean, you know, if you think of your, think of yourself as a planner for all of this, and you know that, as a matter of fact, I was rereading what I wrote about what Thomas Barnett said. And basically, he said that the Navy was going to become a global force. The Army is never coming home. They're going to be out there, you know, in the Middle East forever. And that the Marines will become the domestic force, which will be a big part of which will be system administration. Well, system administration is the management of the systems
at doggone
dual hats. Yeah. You know, they will be the watchers, but then they will also be the club that comes out, the invisible fist that comes out.
Well, here's a thought for you. We have, in fact, I got audio. Maybe I'll get to it on next week's show. But Trump, I believe the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, is in China right now. They're having high-level dialogues with the communist Chinese right now. In fact, I'll tell you what. Let me just go ahead and play this for you. This is from, I believe, the State Department press briefing.
So I want to start by telling you a little bit about a terrific dialogue and engagement that we held today earlier today at the State Department. Secretary Rex Tillerson and the Chinese Vice Premier Liao Yandong chaired the first U.S.-China social and cultural dialogue here at the State Department today. That dialogue focused on advancing cooperation in seven areas: education, social development, science and technology, health, subnational, arts and culture, and environment and conservation. The two sides committed to safeguarding global health security and support for educational exchanges, particularly the U.S.-China Fulbright program. The secretary advocated for access of foreign media to Chinese audiences. Later today, Secretary Tillerson will travel to China to meet with Foreign Minister Wang Yi, the State Councilor Yang Jiechur, pardon me, and President Xi Jinping. The secretary will discuss a range of issues, focusing on the president's planned travel to the region, the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, also trade and investment. In addition to that, this is building on Secretary of Commerce's Ross's visit earlier this week. We're working with China to rebalance our trade and our lopsided relationship in that realm and ensure that China provides fair treatment to U.S. companies in ways that create U.S. jobs. Secretary Tillerson's visit to China reaffirms the administration's commitment to further broaden and enhance U.S. economic and security interests in the Asia-Pacific region. On Wednesday, the direction of Secretary Tillerson, Deputy Secretary of State John Sullivan, they will host the law enforcement and cybersecurity dialogue that's next week. It will be co-chaired by Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Acting Secretary of Homeland Security Elaine Duke on the U.S. side and State Counselor and Minister of Public Security Guo Shun Kun on the Chinese side. They will talk about increasing cooperation on repatriations, fugitives, counter-narcotics, and also cybercrime. With the conclusion of the law enforcement cybersecurity dialogue, the first round of the four cabinet-level dialogues agreed to by President Trump and President Xi at Mar-a-Lago in April will have been completed. The diplomatic and security dialogue and the comprehensive economic dialogue were held in June and July, respectively.
Now, as they are crying that the Russians are coming, the integration with the communist Chinese continues.
Right, and everything that she mentioned there, I could link that up with the study that I did when I was calling the inland port system the Trojan Triangles, because that's where the foreign troops masquerading as a domestic business will be located. And that's where you get the integration between the military mission and the domestic arena is at the transportation hubs, where they will be the global control centers.
Well, and the reason why I brought that up at this point in time is because we're talking about the military in domestic law enforcement roles. But how do we know that the military is going to be American military? And I think that's what a lot of people seem to miss. Under the international system, we don't have, U.S. military and, other countries have their own military. No, they're all just a part of a global peace force. You know, you have right now on the battlefield, you already have soldiers being commanded by foreign commanders.
Yeah. Do you remember when Leon Panetta, I can't remember if it was during the Bush administration or the Obama administration, but Congress asked Leon Panetta, they were asking him, do we have control of our military? And Panetta's answer was basically very ambiguous. You know, could we stop the military if they were going to go do something? And that's really the danger of the unified command plan that they had, where they've created regional territories that the military commanders are in charge of.
Yeah, now
then you add cybersecurity on top of that for unified command for global cybersecurity. And that's it. I mean, it's the whole bag of marbles. They've got everything locked up.
Later on in the press briefing, and I believe this was this past Thursday, it was either this past Tuesday or this past Thursday, but I believe this one was Thursday, she revisited the subject of this high level dialogue that they're going on. This is the first of the four, she said, but she revealed what some of the goals are.
If I can just, you know, bend your ear for a moment on the dialogue that we had today. It was terrific to have met so many foreign ministers, so many cabinet-level officials from China. We met with the education minister, the finance minister, the equivalent of our health and human services secretary, and they were all here for a bunch of meetings with their various counterparts to talk about different forms of dialogue. This is one of the four meetings that the president, President Trump, and Mr. Xi had agreed to earlier this year. So it was a terrific exchange of ideas about how the United States can perhaps bring in more of their students. There are so many students who are coming from China every year. I know that the secretary looks to just reinforce the relationship with China. As two massive powers, massive populations, we want to have a good understanding and a good working relationship with China. Today was a part of that. The secretary's trip, where he's, will land later today or tomorrow, is a continuation of that. Part of what he will be doing on that trip is helping to facilitate the president's travel and talk about what the president will be doing when the president arrives there.
Okay. So the goal is to bring in more Chinese students.
Right.
And
those Chinese students will end up working in the fusion centers.
I think so. Uh-huh. They're the ones that are going to be trained to keep the United States Americans, the American citizens, if I can use that terminology, in line.
Sure, because they can dispatch paramilitary and not think twice about it because they're not us.
And they're thoroughly indoctrinated into communism. See, we're being stabbed in the back, and while flag-waving patriot people, my team, Trump, Trump, Trump. You know, at the same time, we forget, or many people do, that Trump was a Democrat, And Trump was, he came out in the public, there was a publication that talked about how he was advocating for open borders. So how do you have, how do you jive America first with bringing in Chinese nationals into your universities and then advocating amnesty for people who are flooding in, the whole DACA thing? I mean, it kind of really hollows out the discussion about the borders and how we need to secure the borders when all of this other stuff. You know, on the one hand, he's talking about extreme vetting. And on the other hand, where's the extreme vetting for communist Chinese? Communist Chinese. We're letting them in. No vetting at all.
Yeah, well, the extreme vetting, that was always a fraud. The FBI agents say, what they call extreme vetting is they do a search on their database. And if they don't get a hit, it's all good. Well, if there's no data in the database, obviously you're not going to get a hit. But does that mean that somebody is a good person to come in? No. It just means you don't have any data in the database. So, but that's what they're calling the extreme vetting, that and talking to them. You know, like the interview at the airport when you're coming back into the country or, you know, leaving the country.
Yeah, I got some Strobe Talbot audio. Do you want to address that or...
Sure, yeah.
Before we do,
yeah,
though...
Yeah, he's important, and it's important that he's leaving Brookings. I hope you have that clip.
Well, hopefully I have what you want. But before we go to that, let me just real quickly share the final three paragraphs of what Vicky wrote here, because I think she has some good things to say here. And again, this is in her article, The Invisible Fist. They are bankrupting the civilian side of the economy, building their military transportation hubs and fusion centers while integrating military requirements into the domestic economy behind the domestic curtain of economic development. And if that weren't enough, the fusion centers are the hubs of the police state. On September 11, 2001, we entered the realm of the virtual reality of information operations with video of an airplane into a building at a transportation hub. What's real and what isn't? What's military and what is civilian? Most importantly, it is an American business. Is it an American business, or is it the operation of a foreign military behind a domestic business cover? On September 12th, NATO invoked Article 5, and soon thereafter, it was announced that Northern Command, a regional military combatant command, would be established. And there's the coup.
Yeah.
And it is a coup. Mm-hmm. Now, Strobe Talbot, you know, he's the Deputy Secretary of State during the Clinton administration, or was. As you said, he announced that he's stepping down as president of the Brookings Institute, and he was asked to comment about the Trump administration. Now, you'd expect him to say negative things about Trump, but he actually had positive things to say about the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, being respected around the world, but he expressed concern that diplomacy... was somehow being squeezed out. So
I cannot find a word that captures my emotions about what's happening there. This is a disaster, and it cannot be blamed on presidential personnel offices in the White House. What is happening, which is the diminishment of the import of the work that the State Department does and the morale of the people who do it and even the number of people who are doing it, that is not just coming out of the White House, and it's not because of the president's base wants to see that part of the swamp drained. I know it's called Foggy Bottom, but it's not a swamp. It's an institution that has, of course, outposts throughout the world that is absolutely essential to our security. And nobody can make that argument better than our military. I've heard the highest praise over the years that I've been in Washington from our uniformed military, that diplomacy is where defense starts. And that part of the defense of the United States is badly it's not getting the kind of leadership from the White House, and it's not getting the kind of leadership it needs from the Secretary of State. He is, I think, part of the problem.
Have you ever spoken with him about this?
Absolutely not. Haven't been asked.
Have you heard him asking around the people that you know? I mean, one of the odd things about Mr. Tillerson is that he doesn't seem to be asking advice of sort of any of the usual gray heads. He never met with his predecessor, John Kerry. As far as I know, he never met with Hillary Clinton. He had very few meetings with any previous Secretary of State. You are in those circles. Have you heard him reaching out?
Well, when I was in the profession that both of you are in, I covered the State Department, and I have, this is without precedent. No matter if one party comes in and the other party goes out, the incoming Secretary of State has always gone to his or her predecessors, plural. And I don't think that that has happened. And the what I hear from, I have many friends who I revered as colleagues back in the 90s, who say that they have been in a way banned from sending memos up to the Secretary's office. It's sort of like they're supposed to be like Victorian children. They don't speak unless they are spoken to, and they're not spoken to very much. And there are a lot of empty offices. As you both know, we are just coming out of the United Nations General Assembly, and a lot of diplomats from other countries, including some of our most important allies, have come down to Washington to meet with people at the NSC. They're having some luck there, and also trying to go over to the State Department. And one of two things happen. Either there's nobody in the office, or whoever's in the office doesn't really know what the policy thoughts are on the seventh floor, which is...
Okay, so I'm going to cut that off there in the interest of time, because I do have one more clip, and that goes to the Russian question. But I thought it was interesting that he was talking about the squeezing out of diplomacy. Because Trump is... We talk a lot on this broadcast, since all this stuff has been going on and since Trump was elected, about the war going on with between the deep state, between the CIA agents. You know, basically it looks like there's military intelligence on one side and the traditional CIA type of intelligence on the other side, and there's competition and jockeying going on.
Well, sure, because they are basically collapsing the framework of the nation state as we knew it. I have a recording of Tim Worth, who went to work for the State Department in 1993 as the head of global affairs. And he said that in the coming years, the need for the State Department was going to be diminished, and they needed to find a new mission for themselves, a new constituency.
Wow.
And their new constituency would be the refugees and immigrants to the United States.
And economy, building other nations' economies. We can't forget that.
It's now almost a full year since the alleged hacking of the election by the Russians. Our intelligence community...
Alleged?
Well, what I was going to say was our intelligence community doesn't think it's alleged.
Yes, alleged, because it's never been proven.
President Trump just the other day repeated once again that somehow this is a hoax, this is fake news. I can't keep track of it. It's just yesterday the President of the United States repeated this. Number one, what do you believe the investigations of this are likely to find? How serious do you believe these investigations are when it comes to the potential jeopardy that President Trump and others may face? And number two, where do you think our policy is toward Russia today? And I mean this not as a rhetorical question, but you and I both know, we've talked to many people whose jobs it is to focus on Russia. They can't even tell us what is the policy of the United States toward Russia today.
I just watched a movie called Icarus. It's about doping in sports, and you might not think that has a whole lot to do with Russia. It has practically everything to do with Russia. Russia today, under Putin, is weaponizing 21st century technology, both in the digital world and in the biological world, to weaken his adversaries, us being number one. Sometimes the question becomes, is this a new Cold War? It's certainly not the same ideological competition that we had with Marxism-Leninism, but it is a virtual war. And it isn't just the jeopardy that the President of the United States may have as a result of the Mueller investigation. It's the country. It's American, it's American democracy. And I've had any number of Europeans, particularly from Nordic and Baltic states, but also major countries on the continent, feeling the same threat that we're dealing with. And I think it's going to be, without maybe the specter of mushroom clouds, it's going to be a version of the kind of threat that we faced during the Cold War from nuclear weapons, now that there is the weaponization of the digital world, and things like our health.
There you go. He laid it all out right there, didn't he?
Yes, and I could elaborate on what he said there, but I probably shouldn't. Yeah.
Hey, you want me to save that sound bite and let's talk about it next week?
I'm not sure if I should actually talk about it on the radio because it's I don't know. We'll talk about it.
All right.
We'll talk about it offline.
All right. Well, man, it was a fast show. Things go by way too quick. Thanks for being with us, and thanks, Vicki, as always. Appreciate
you
joining us, ladies and gentlemen, and join us back here next week and spread the word about the broadcast. In the meantime, pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it and get active. We have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, we need you to do that.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye, everyone.